This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here at Jenkins World and DevOps World with Sacha Labouré.
Great to see you, Ian. My name is Sacha Labouré, and I'm the CEO and co-founder at CloudBees. You might have heard about CloudBees because you heard about Jenkins. We've been the company, and we are the company behind Jenkins and JenkinsX. We are this week at the Moscone Center for our yearly conference, DevOps World, Jenkins World. We're expecting more than 2,000 people, and we have 75 sponsors, so it's very exciting.
This is your 15th year.
Of Jenkins, yes, it's amazing. 15 years, yeah. In IT terms, it feels like forever. Tomorrow, during my keynote, I talk about the acceleration of time, essentially. One of the references I make is it took us from the creation of the wheel to the first flight was about 5,000 years. But then from the first flight to the first supersonic flight, only 40 years. That's nothing. Then 15 to go to space and 8 to go to the moon and back. So you can see this amazing acceleration. And 15 years is essentially the time we needed to go from a supersonic flight to go to space. That's both long and extremely short in some way.
You and I have spoken many times over the years about how we moved DevOps out from being initially a unique thing for a small group of developers to a wider part of the IT audience, and then moving outside of IT and if there are other departments that could benefit. Looking at the releases from this year, you've suddenly taken a big jump down that line.
If you look at any company, you wouldn't be able to see a company doing sales and marketing without a CRM or without an ERP to do accounting. And yet, we say that software is eating the world, but we don't have a system for software delivery. So we're announcing this new category that we think is absolutely needed called Software Delivery Management, or SDM for short. And we think that in 5 years, people will think it's silly to imagine a company not using an SDM, much like you'd be silly to talk to a sales organization saying we don't use a CRM. The idea is that essentially you have organizations start to do Agile and CI and CD, and you have the best team starting to do that. The most influential team start to do that. But at some point, it gets adopted across the organization, but you actually end up with a lot of silo. You think that you have everybody doing Agile and CD, so you feel like it's homogeneous. But the reality is that when you say that, what you don't say is that everybody does it slightly differently with different tools. Even when they use some of the same tools, it's not necessarily shared across, you've got absolutely no idea what's going on. You have all of those streams of changes from developers going to production at any point in time, and go find out what's your priority, where you have bottlenecks, where you can accelerate things, what is even the performance of this, or simply you need to coordinate things, you need to satisfy some policies if you want to stay in business. All of that in that stream that's going at warp speed is extremely hard to do. And so one option is to simply say, okay, we're going to pause the world regularly and just check everything. But the very first thing we've tried to do is remove friction. So adding friction is probably not the best option. So what we're doing is really observing things, letting the flow happen and pushing further to observation and to the left that those right behavior are being met. And we're also making sure that it goes beyond the simple scope of I have an application that I push to production. Why do you even have this application? The features, where do they come from? Features is kind of the equivalent in a CRM of an opportunity. You want to win by winning that feature. But that feature has an history. You interviewed customers. So what are those interviews? Developers want to know that. They want to know where it is going, what impact they're having, and whether that works or not, but also upstream, what people really wanted. So you're really connecting IT and software delivery to the rest of the business, which I think is obviously a much needed thing to do.
I must admit, when I first saw the press release, I'm thinking, but we have software delivery lifecycle tools, we have release management tools, we have a whole bunch of tools that we've used for a very long time in software. Why do we need yet another acronym, another approach to doing this?
Well, first, because it's very cool to create new acronyms. But not only, because a lot of those approaches are very monolithic based. If you live in my universe, God is going to help you, essentially. My little God in my universe will know everything about you. But this is not what we see in organizations. In organizations, we see developers want to make choices. They want to have options. They want to discover new tools. And so you have, and you're going to have forever, a myriad of different things being used left and right. And so you need to have an open environment where you can capture all of those signals and that ocean of signals, knowing that they're always going to be changing. And all of those tools we're talking about, typically, they're my way or highway. It's either you fit into the canvas or you don't. And with the pace of change we're observing right now, where one day it's OpenStack, the day after it's Kubernetes or Mesos, and it's evolving so fast that making the bet that you can hold a single universe that will fit everything you do is just impossible.
But it's not just that rate of change, is it, inside the IT department? If we take a slightly wider view of this, we're seeing massive change around the organisation. We have banks now who require all of their analysts to learn to code. We have no code, low code being pushed out to end users and to business analysts around the organisation. How do we maintain the idea of Agile and DevOps as an underlying methodology, but at the same time bring in people who aren't thinking that way, who don't necessarily understand some of our controls and our methods?
I don't think there is any easy way, to be candid with you. All companies are struggling a bit with that because you need to marry your history, your DNA, with what you want to become, and that can be a long journey. I just think that sometimes we tend to favor too much either culture or processes ahead of tools. But my perception is that actually tools are a great way to forge culture and processes. Sometimes I hear people say, okay, we've worked on the culture and we train everybody, and at some point we're going to get tools to get there. And my perception is this needs to be an iterative process, an agile process, because the tools are going to help you adapt your processes and are going to help you transform your culture as much as the culture will then impact the tools you're using. You know, there is a feedback loop that needs to happen. You're essentially the sum of what you do. So if you don't change what you do, you're not going to evolve in your culture.
For much of this to work, however, there are two things which we use a lot: orchestration and automation. But companies struggle very much with the automation. They're not sure what should be automated, whether they can trust the automation. How far can we continue to take companies down that line before we hit significant barriers?
You're right. I think automation is hard. You can get to 80% of automation in 20% of the time, but then what remains can be exhausting. We're seeing a number of things take place there to help with that, but some of them require a bit of a leap of faith. There was this old joke about I'm testing in production. It's becoming less of a joke when you can start doing redeployment and just roll back to X percent of your code base, look at the behavior and compare to a baseline. You're essentially testing against users, but you're doing it in a way that's okay. You're taking a calculated risk in doing so. I don't think it's a necessarily bad approach, because what's the alternative? The alternative is not to go fast or to invest an almost unlimited amount of resources to get to the end of your automation. I don't know if we got to the end of the road there. We certainly don't, but I can see again and again creative solutions being developed to try to develop that, because full automation is going to become very, very difficult. I don't want to drop the AI bomb because it feels like the magic one. But I do think that AI will help us in the future to do better choices in many environments, not just in app dev, but it's a reality, yes.
I have no problem with the idea of AI speeding up what we do. Take away those mundane tasks, the things nobody really wants to be doing day in, day out. One of the challenges I have is how people will interact with that. I'll give you an example. If I look at security, security uses an awful lot of machine learning and AI systems to reduce things down so they know what the real issues are they have to deal with. Yet security, when we talk about DevOps, and we try and add DevOps second there, security is a bit of a barrier because they come with a whole different culture. They come with a blame culture. You do something wrong, people shout and scream and point fingers. In DevOps, we don't. We stand up and say, okay, we made a mistake. How do we do better? How do we take technologies that are coming along, like AI, that take away the mundane, and at the same time use those technologies to remove cultural barriers to get everybody on the same page?
I don't have a good answer. It's a good point you're raising. To me, it's education. It's intelligence, but not the artificial one. It's a non-artificial intelligence that gets us there. It's what culture do you want to do? At some point, I feel like there is almost an ROI calculation, coldly, which is, do you get better output by putting blame, or do you get better output in the long run by not putting blame? And I think you're getting more output by not putting blame, because it's not just about risk. It's also about innovation. By enforcing too much of security, you're actually reducing innovation. It's like if you were to say the R&D department in our company is going to be led by lawyers. It's always easier for a lawyer to answer no to a question, to say yes. At some point, you need to take the risk and say, you know what? I understand you're saying no, but we're still going to do it, because I think in the long run, that's going to be the better option. But yeah, you might take a hit or two in the meantime.
Risk is always a challenge when you're trying to accelerate software. One of the things we've tried to get people to understand for a number of years with DevOps is, yes, it's fail fast, fail frequent, and move forwards, but actually it's controlling those failures. We're not trying to do massive projects. We're looking at little bits and pieces, so those failures aren't as damaging or as destructive as they would have been 10, 15, 20 years ago with other methodologies. Are you seeing a wider acceptance that actually we can make mistakes, we can fail, providing we learn from them and move forward? Or are you still seeing people struggling with this idea of failure's not bad?
It depends who you're talking to. If you talk to development teams, it's obviously well accepted. They work in sprint. They're going to be looking at what worked, what didn't work. The amount of changes, it's micro changes in the end compared to the breadth of an application. It's well accepted for the other jobs around, for the business around. I think it requires a bit more work, but very few people get it intellectually or conceptually. I think you need to live through it. What are the options? We tend to always compare two options that do not exist. It's not, okay, either I go fast and I fail fast versus I go fast but I don't fail. That doesn't exist, otherwise we would have picked it. It's either I go fast and I fail fast, and yes, it's going to be a micro issue, but I might fail more frequently. The other alternative is I don't move fast at all. I might fail much less, but when I fail, it's going to be a biggie. That's a real alternative. It's much like when we talk about cloud security, when we talk about the cloud potentially being risky. Okay, fine. But what's the alternative? It's not a super secure on-premise environment. So do you want the risk of security in the cloud, or you want the risk of security on-premise? That's a reality. Sometimes we're not just comparing the right choices.
When we look at risk and DevOps, we've got to that point with making those decisions in our sprints and the way we behave. I mentioned earlier low-code and no-code now starting to appear. They sit outside of our DevOps world. They're people who aren't necessarily aware of how to assess that risk. They're not necessarily people who are willing to take that chance of failure or not failure yet. They're being told they've got to write code, they've got to be available to do this. How do we extend the help to them to understand the benefits of what we do and how that plays into the use of low-code, no-code for the organization?
Yes, I haven't my thoughts completely settled on this one, because in some ways, sometimes I feel like some of those developers will be at the boundary of the traditional IT. And what they're going to be doing is 10x or 100x more sophisticated than what we used to do before. But maybe it's the same type of work that we used to do on Excel spreadsheet. It was some very low code type of programming. There was always a gray area. I don't know what's the percentage in organization, but of the behavior of the processes that are not in backend systems. They're just tribal knowledge shared in spreadsheet all over the organization. With low code, you get to replace those spreadsheets with just low code applications. Will they ever be onboarded formally as part of the organization, or will they remain at the fringe? I don't know. If they remain at the fringe, it might not matter. Like today, you probably do a bunch of Excel, much like I do, and we do a bunch of things. We share that among the team. It's going to stay this way. We're not applying any specific... It's quick and dirty, essentially, but that's fine. But maybe you have something else in mind.
I was thinking more of your big announcement, the SDM. How do you widen that to pull these people in? Because if this is about understanding more of what's going on, if this is about understanding the entire life cycle in the way previous things are finished... This seems to be a great opportunity to engage with those people, but give them frameworks and controls and opportunities.
You're technically right. I just think that it's too early for us. Mm-hmm. DevOps is a long, long, long train, and you have the leading edge people at the front, and you have a very long train of people who don't have the maturity level yet. Actually, a lot of what we would be talking about in terms of SDM is already something pretty advanced. Mm-hmm. It requires people to have done CI and CD to want to go beyond, understand beyond. I think you're right, technically. We should make this practice accessible to a broader range of users. But I can already see that the current users in IT, the current users in development, already need to be maintained up to speed and constantly brought up to speed on all of those innovations. I guess I'm trying to be pragmatic on this one.
When we talk about CI/CD and SDM and other technologies, we do so from an IT perspective. When you and I have spoken in the past, we've looked at the challenge of processes inside organizations, an HR department, a finance department. We're in a world now where everybody's trying to onboard all their partners and main customers through APIs and everything else. What can we teach them? What can we help them with in the technologies we use by decoupling them from being IT-based and actually saying the underlying principles apply to almost everything you do in the business?
Yes, that I think is going to be the last mile of evolution. In some ways, those digital transformation, at least initially, are pretty comfortable for the business. because they focus very much on IT. On one hand, the business regrets that we're not being more agile, that we can't push value sooner, so IT evolves towards making that happen. But when that happens, they sometimes don't realize what that means, is that the business has to evolve as well, to iterate as well, to be ready to adapt, to correct course based on what's being measured and so on. And I think a lot of businesses are not ready to do that. You can't unleash the value of agile completely unless the rest of the organization makes that happen as well. And you talked about the culture of blame. That means being okay with failing fast in the business as well. Failing fast in IT is almost like a given. We know that IT screw up. We know about the over budget, the over delay or whatever. They almost get a pass for that, but in the business, it tends to be seen differently. And yes, if we could drive experiments in the business, if we could be more data-driven, more agile in the way we do business, I think companies would have a lot to benefit from.
We opened by saying this is your 15th year, and I said you've got a lot of announcements. What are the top three announcements for the show for you?
First one is SDM, really. We're going to do a kick-ass demo tomorrow. I think it's going to make a lot of people excited. A lot of people, when they hear about SDM, they can mentally see how it's going to be. They can conceptually visualize it. But once you start seeing things in action, then that gives a very different feeling. So that's going to be streamed live, also non-live, by the way. I'm super excited by that. The second one, I would say, is Google. We are working closely with Google on their Anthos project. As you know, Anthos is this way to have a managed Kubernetes on-premise as well or on other clouds. So from your Google console, you can end up seeing the 12 Kubernetes cluster you have, but some might actually be running on-premises and they manage it completely remotely. So that's great from an infrastructure standpoint. But I think what a lot of people don't understand is that we're moving from an infrastructure place to an app-centric view of the world. What matters in the end to create value is to deploy applications that provide value. And for a developer, it doesn't matter if you have a load balancer that can redirect IP packets or what's not. What you want to do is, can I do A/B testing? Can I do rollback and so on? And so we need to provide the right tools in motion on top of this amazing infrastructure. And that's part of what we do with Jenkins X on top of Google with Anthos. And we're working very closely with them. That makes me super excited. Last but not least, I have a little excitement. I'm a geek at heart. So I love the accelerator announcement. We acquired Electric Cloud 4 months ago. And one of their products is CloudBees Accelerator now. And makes it possible to shortcut the time it takes to compile, build, and test software by either avoiding to rebuild what was already built or parallelizing things. This new release is specialized for Android. Now you get to build Android for devices in minutes instead of hours. So that's the kind of thing I think it's going to be hugely useful for lots of telco and vendors in that space.
Sasha, happy birthday for CloudBees.
Thank you, Ian.
And thank you for talking with me.
Thank you.